This is the John Favreau's My Daddy podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya.
Two, three, four. I'm a combat pilot. I belong in the air. Yes, I'm a combat pilot. It, I belong in the year. It's Independence Day, motherfucker. What do I care? Cause I'm a combat pilot. I belong in the air. Will Smith, Jeff Goldblum, yeah, they're my pals. Get the fuck out of this room.
Oh, and hello.
Welcome to the podcast.
Those are the musical stylings of Monica Montoya.
Before we started filming this, or recording this, sorry, I keep thinking that we're being filmed. I thought about, you know, Independence Day needs its own theme song. And, you know, there's the...
The score wasn't enough.
No. You know, the guy goes, the president's like, I'm a combat pilot. I belong in the air. Right? And then that leads into a whole chorus, and there's like... There's army men and like airmen, and they're all fucking doing jazz squares. And he's like, I'm a fucking combat pilot. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, yeah. This is my musical.
I say, let's pitch Independence Day the musical. It'll be 4 hours because musicals are notoriously longer than whatever movie they
I know this is the longest fucking thing.
And Independence Day is 2.5 hours long. So why don't we just make it an opera while we're at it?
Oh, I'm a combat pilot.
Oh, well, anyway, how are you, Monica?
The fires are happening.
Things are scary and bad.
Yeah, so right now. Again, we don't say it enough. We live in Los Angeles.
Which is on fire.
Which is literally, well,
Los Angeles isn't.
Like,
part of it is.
North of Pasadena is on fire.
The Angeles National Forest is.
Yeah, and other parts
and
too.
And other parts.
So that's the problem here.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the like air is thick with smoke.
Yeah.
Every time you go outside, you start sounding more and more like Sam Jones.
Yeah, I've had like a scratchy throat for days.
Yeah. So
that's nice.
Welcome to California. See, the thing is, everyone's like, oh my God, California is like sunny and like great. Bitch, we have earthquakes. We have fires.
And everything's on fire.
Everything's always on fire. There's always cracks in the sidewalk, and you think, this was either because of a root or because of a 9.1 earthquake.
And because a lot of us live next to freeways, you're like, is my house shaking because a big rig just went by, or is this the end?
Is this the end?
So, yeah, we're having a rough time, but this will pick it up because yeah. This is going to be, I think, a fun episode.
Yeah. This is one of our top daddies, if
top
you will.
Top 3 to 5 between the two of us.
Yeah. Which if you want to go check out our Instagram highlight with our about us section, yeah. You'll know, which Jessica's been truly killing it on that front.
It's been distracting me from the impending doom. Is I'm just going, I shit post on our Instagram. Truly. I wake up in the morning and I go, who do I want to Google today to find a picture of to be inspired? Yesterday, yeah. It was Paul Giamatti.
It was Paul Giamatti.
Who knows where it will take me tomorrow?
I mean, I'm living for it. You know, if you want a wine pairing with a daddy, let her know. She's got you.
Yeah, that was a fun game. I think I might bring that back like bi-weekly.
I agree.
Inspired by Paul Giamatti, who knows nothing about wine but in real life, but Lumao. Plays
a wine freak
in Sideways. So if you submit a daddy, I'll give you a movie to watch and a wine pairing that I chose relatively arbitrarily.
Yeah, even though we know someone who is a sommelier or
yeah,
whatever
do.
The fuck his
we
name
do
is.
Know a sommelier, but I will not consult him.
Holy shit.
This is my game. This is how I win.
Well, you know what? That being said, let's just fucking go into it. This is enough. This podcast is going to be longer than Independence Day. Just an FYI.
2 hours and 45 minutes.
Buckle your seatbelts.
So today's episode is Jeff Goldblum. Everyone, he's a king.
The Bloom.
He is a king. And I'm going to tell you about him, okay? So, Daddy Jeff. Unconventionally handsome and equipped with a famously peculiar speaking cadence, actor Jeff Goldblum has been intriguing audiences for decades. After studying acting as a teen during the summer at Carnegie Mellon University, Goldblum moved to New York and got his big screen break playing Freak Number One in 1974's Death Wish. He chooses to eat vegan chicken wings on the show Hot Ones and was spotted at a veggie grill by Kevin Smith. But despite all of this information, Jeff is in fact not a vegan.
Yeah, right.
Weird, right?
So strange.
Jeff Goldblum is a whole ass non-vegan snack. Not only that, but he's a literal daddy to sons River Joe and Charlie Ocean. Jeff is one of our top daddies, and we're so excited to be talking about him today, aren't we, Monica?
Woo! Yeah, I'm really concerned about him and his non-veganism. I feel like if you choose like not real chicken wings to eat on Hot Ones, like, what does that say about you?
I think he just likes the taste of vegan food sometimes.
Does anyone?
Yeah, like, not me, because I notoriously, like, am not a huge fan of it. But there is this one. Okay, so you know that company Morningstar?
Like Lucifer Morningstar?
No. Like, it's a food company called Morningstar.
Okay.
And they make these vegetarian, well, I guess they're vegan, like sausage, breakfast sausage patties.
Oh, I've heard of them.
And they used to serve them in my college dining hall. And I got really like hooked on them because they taste incredible. And so I still buy them. But I like don't ever eat vegan food.
Wow.
I know.
I eat vegan alternatives to a lot of things. The one thing that I won't like eat is vegan alternative to chicken, because it like chicken as a whole already kind of freaks me out.
Sure.
And I feel like vegan chicken just doesn't get me anywhere.
Okay.
It doesn't get me where I want to go.
So you might as well just eat real chicken.
So I might as well just eat real chicken if I want to. And if I don't, it is what it is. Jeff Goldblum, your choices make me shiver.
I mean, him as a person makes me shiver in like a lot of ways.
Oh, definitely.
Am I scared? Am I turned on? Am I excited?
Am I annoyed?
I don't know. I think I'm all of it.
I think Jeff Goldblum specifically is a very interesting person in general. I mean, he has so many different interests and like he has so many different talents that sort of like span his entire life.
Yeah.
And just looking at sort of his filmography, he hasn't done like a whole lot compared to other actors.
Well, I mean, he's like been in many things, but he's been, but for someone who is like such an A-list celebrity, he has not starred in many movies.
I know, right?
Yeah.
He does a lot of cameos.
Yeah, that like a lot of cameos them. And supporting roles that he's like really well known for, like Jurassic Park.
Like the dinosaur film that I'm not allowed to talk about today.
I'm sorry, but there would not have been
okay,
much to
listen,
say.
I just want to say this is the fucking Haunted Mansion all over again. I'm not here for this. There's going to be a future episode that's like all the movies Monica wanted to do and Jessica shut down.
We're going to do solo episodes at some point in the future.
And it's going to be Haunted Mansion, Jurassic Park, and like 5,000 other ones.
Okay, fine. I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, the movies that we're getting into today are sort of like movies that show his range in terms of like what he can do as an actor, what he can do as a fly, and what he can do as an alien.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Jeff Goldblum's acting chops combined with Jeff Goldblum's just like kooky taste.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes,
Gina
yes.
Davis is coincidentally also in two of these.
I know, which I think is not coincidental. They were married, right?
Well, yeah, they were married during this time.
It is what it is. When you're an actor and an actress, you get married, you star in films together, you get divorced, and then you marry contortionists. That's what
like
happens.
Like Jeff Goldblum. It's just what happens. We don't make the rules.
You marry a Canadian and then have children and name them after bodies of water.
Yeah, that's what you do.
That's just the track. That's the track. But anyway, the first film that we have for you guys today is called The Fly. It's a little movie called The Fly. I don't know if you've ever heard
teeny
of it.
Teeny tiny film.
A teeny tiny little film called The Fly. It came out in 1986. It was directed by David Cronenberg, written by David Cronenberg, different from David Cronenberg, and Charles Edward Pogue, based on the short story by George Langelang.
We don't actually know if that's how you say it.
But, you know, he was Canadian French. It is what it is. He's a like, sci-fi
George,
writer.
If you're still alive.
He's not.
Okay, well.
He's not. When scientist Seth Brundle, played phenomenally by Jeff Goldblum, completes his teleportation device, he decides to test its abilities on himself. Unbeknownst to him, a housefly slips in during the process, leading to a merger of man and insect. Who wrote the synopsis? Initially, Brundle appears to have undergone a successful teleportation, but the fly's cells begin to take over his body. As he becomes increasingly fly-like, Brundle's girlfriend, played by Gina Davis, is horrified as the person she once loved deteriorates into a monster.
Bam, bam, bam.
A fly monster.
The fly. The Brundle
called
fly.
Called Brundle Fly. I just want to start off by saying I am not a fan of movies that use like body horror or like movies where things having to do with the human body,
mm-hmm.
anything.
Yeah.
That like elicit fear and anxiety.
Uh-huh. Go on.
So for example, I think I'm really hardcore because I got through Black Swan.
Because of that one fucking scene where
the
she
one scene.
Well, and then I guess there is the scene where like the feathers start
like come out of her and she like
her
grabs them.
Break.
And yeah, so like I got through that, right? And so I think I'm a fucking badass.
Yeah.
And then Jessica goes, we have to watch The Fly.
You can't talk about Jeff Goldblum and not talk about The Fly. I'm sorry.
And I go, no, I want to do the dinosaur movie. And she says, no, we're doing The Fly. And you know what I say? Okay, that's what I say.
Well, I said we're doing it, but I will watch it first and take note of all of the body horror moments.
Did.
And send you notes beforehand so you know when to close your eyes. And guess what? I did miss one on accident.
Yeah.
But it was an animal one. It wasn't a human one.
It's still deeply affected.
I know. There's a scene where a baboon pretty much turns inside out.
He turns inside out and becomes barbecue. Like,
yeah.
It's not cool.
And he's like laying on the ground screaming and writhing.
Not a real baboon.
It's pretty disgusting.
I just want everyone to know that.
Well, I mean, the baboon for the rest of the movie was real.
Oh, he was real.
Yeah.
Animal actors. I love animal actors.
I heard he was pretty vicious, though.
You know what?
And they were only like truly the only reason he didn't attack anyone is because Jeff Goldblum was like large. He's like 6'2" and was like, now this is my territory, monkey. And the baboon was like, okay, fine.
But yeah, anyway. Back to me, the star of this podcast.
I'm so sorry.
I sort of got over it
because
of Jeff Goldblum's performance, which we're going to get into in a second.
Yeah.
But for those of you out there who are hesitant to watch The Fly because you're a little bitch like me, and you are really scared of like body horror, mm-hmm. or like weird shit, like getting toenails like taken off of you or what have you.
Yeah.
Watch it anyway. Have a friend.
Yeah.
Watch it beforehand. You know, timestamp all the shit parts, and then watch it. And I promise you, it'll be a rewarding experience.
Or just do it like I did and go in blind. I mean, to be fair, I don't like body horror. I just am in the camp of like, I need to experience this movie for all that it is. And so I did it, and I 100% like screamed out loud.
Oh, me too.
Multiple times in the movie. So, you know, I just was prepared, but it was still rough.
Yeah.
But this movie overall, I had never seen this movie before. I had heard of it before. And so I was like, yeah, he turns into a fly. I didn't like really grasp that it was technically a horror movie. I thought it was going to be kind of funny, but it's like fully not. It's fully a drama.
Oh, no, yeah.
It's very... It shows like a lot of, it's very gory. There's a lot of like,
it's visceral,
emotional trauma going mm-hmm. on in the movie. He doesn't turn into like a literal fly. He turns into like what?
A morphed version.
Like what they perceived a human and fly combo would be, which is like a
grotesque,
a million times grosser than you can even imagine.
The thing that I will say is that the closer he gets to being a fly, the less afraid I am of him.
I was less afraid of him, but the scenes where like Gina Davis would still go back to the apartment and be like,
oh, poor girl,
I'm so worried about you. I was like, he's vomiting on his food.
Yep.
Just leave.
Gina, come on. The sex is not that good.
It might be though. It's Jeff Goldblum.
Yes, but not fly. It's just one of those things where Jeff Goldblum is handsome.
Oh, yeah.
In the beginning. And then at the end, he looks nothing like Jeff Goldblum.
No. He looks like
a fly.
Like, you know in SpongeBob, that episode where like the Krabby Patty meat like comes to life.
Yes.
It kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah. Nickelodeon, if you're out there, you made something very similar, my friends.
Did you watch The Fly when you were coming up with that?
Were you influenced by The Fly?
They're just like, yeah, we were actually.
Yeah, that was direct inspiration from The Fly. Gina Davis's role in this film is, I mean, she does a phenomenal job. She's a great actress. But her and Jeff Goldblum together is, like, I had never seen a movie with them together, I don't think.
Oh, wow.
This was, like, my first experience with them. And then I guess later on, Earth Girls Are Easy.
There will be a second one.
We'll talk about it. But they're great together. They're absolutely phenomenal together.
It helped that they were a couple at the
time. Yeah, I was going to say, it helps that, like, they're boyfriend and girlfriend during this movie. And that he loved her enough to be jealous as fuck of his co-star when she had, like, intimate scenes with him.
Yeah.
But they have, like, incredible chemistry and play very well off of each other.
Oh, yeah. The whole movie is, like, really heartbreaking in a lot of ways through both of their performances. But I think, like, what I want to, like, kind of, like, emphasize about why this movie is so good other than the performances is because it's, like, it's short. It's, like, 90 minutes. It's snappy. It's, like, really clever. The writing is really good.
Is very good.
It does have one-liners that you kind of think will be cheesy, but I think that lends itself to its self-awareness as a movie, and I think without that, it would be cheesier, if that makes sense.
I mean, did Mel Brooks not produce this movie?
Oh, you're right. He did.
He did.
Well, there we go.
Yeah. I mean, the man's a fucking legend. So. Yeah.
And when this movie starts, it gets, like, I think this is one of the most impressive openings of a movie I've ever seen. Right in there, it's just, like, a close-up shot of Jeff Goldblum's face where he's explaining his experiment to Gina Davis.
Who's a journalist.
And you get all of the information that you will need for the rest of the movie in, like, 30 seconds.
Yep.
And then it just immediately goes into it. And in the next scene, you are introduced to, like, what the telepods are and...
It just brings you on the roller coaster immediately. Like, yeah. It doesn't ease you into it, if that makes any sense.
No, I don't think that there is a good way to, like pussyfoot around the fact that we're eventually going to be turning a man into a fly.
Oh, no.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, in the beginning, obviously, Jeff Goldblum doesn't know that Gina Davis is a fucking journalist. Otherwise, he would not have taken her back to, like, his lab.
Yeah.
Which is, I forget where this movie, like, is set. I don't know if it's Chicago.
They don't tell you, but it was all filmed in Toronto. And okay. They have, like, very distinct, like, Toronto buildings in the background.
Okay.
So I think you're supposed to, like, figure it out.
I guess. I mean, I'm just a fucking idiot, I guess, then.
I had to Google it.
But anyway, his lab is in this, like, back alley industrial building warehouse place, and it is really dirty on the outside, and it looks like the scene of, like, it looks like a horror movie scene.
Mm-hmm.
like a setting where someone goes to take the body of someone and chop it up and put it somewhere else.
Yeah, he's, like, on the top floor of, like, a warehouse.
It's very concerning. And then you go inside and it's actually, like, really clean, and there's, like, a piano. There is
a piano, but no bed.
No bed.
It's a fold out from a couch, but you know.
Yeah, it just seems like he doesn't bring a lot of people over there.
He spends too much time thinking.
Yeah.
Monica. That's why he's a scientist.
That's why he only has one suit. And six
he's
of
like
them.
Fucking Steve Jobs.
I know. He's like, Albert Einstein did this.
Yeah.
These are not dirty, I swear. But Jeff Goldblum, I knew that Jeff Goldblum could act, and I adored him and everything. And I thought that he, as a comedic actor, like, he's brilliant, right?
Oh, yeah.
This was the movie that I saw that made me see him as, like, an actor. Like, Jeff Goldblum is an actor.
Yeah.
And he acts the shit out of this fucking movie. And what I mean by that is, like, he's very nuanced and he's very specific. And he's very natural. Mm-hmm. Despite being such a kind of over-the-top character, he's very natural about it.
Yeah.
Because he internalizes all of it, which is crazy.
And you can see all of it, like, in his eyes. Like, there's the scene after he kills the baboon.
Right.
And he, Gina Davis is not there, and he has the video camera recording, and he like realizes that he killed the baboon while trying to teleport it. And he just like looks into the camera and he's like freaking out and he's fucking pissed. Mm-hmm. And you see like all of the stages of grieving almost like go through his eyes. Precisely. As he's talking to the camera and explaining like what he thinks went wrong, because he's like really pissed and really disappointed, but also sad, but also really determined to do it right. It's incredibly impressive. He plays every stage of the role very impressively. I've never seen an actor have to cover that much ground.
I know. Which he honestly he does in a lot of this film.
Yeah.
I think, you know, his chops sort of like shine through. Mm-hmm. as he progresses into like Brundlefly.
Yeah.
Right? Because like there's a little, you know, every single scene post him telepodding, mm-hmm. like getting into the telepod and teleporting himself. Every scene post that scene, he loses a little bit more of his humanity.
Like every scene, he's essentially supposed to be transitioning more and more. And yet he has to like maintain who Seth Brundle is, like to an extent, and then add all of these different layers while like still making it authentic. I would feel horribly overwhelmed if I were doing that role. Like, and even I think the smaller changes in the beginning where he still hasn't gone through like much physical change, like right. when he's just like really aggressive and really sexual, mm-hmm. like I think that section is especially impressive. Like when he tries definitely. To like shove Gina Davis into the telepod, he's like,
oh my
get
God.
In there. It'll make you feel sexy. Mm-hmm. And like when he starts screaming at her about how she doesn't understand the flesh.
I know.
The amount of times they say flesh in this movie is like absolutely disturbing. But that whole portion of like the Brundlefly transformation is like very disturbing, but he's so impressive before he realizes like that he's undergoing any change. That's the creepiest part.
Yeah, it really fucking freaked me out when he started doing gymnastics. I don't like it when he does gymnastics.
No, it's very creepy. In my notes, I say that's scarier than The Exorcist.
That is. When he just starts like
he's
turning.
Just swinging in full circles.
It's gross.
I don't like that.
Like, but the thing is, he like sort of emits this raw, weird sexual energy that's like not in a good way, like in a very disturbing, aggressive way.
Yeah.
Because apparently flies mate a lot.
A ton. They lay like 600 eggs at a time or some shit like that.
Some bullshit.
Something insane. But yeah, so he's just like super sexual, and then he starts like sweating a lot.
And he starts like getting like pimples.
Yeah, because they end up being like pus.
Balls?
Like pustules. It's super gross.
It's not cute, but somehow Gina Davis still wants to get with him.
Well, she is in love with him, and she wants to make sure he's okay, and is also like, so, I mean, I would be fucking scared if I woke up and my boyfriend had a shift that dramatic.
That would be terrible.
But I would still be like, we need to make sure you're okay. Like, what's going on?
Dude, when he fucking grows, like, the hairs on his back, and she's like, what are these hairs?
And she goes
and
to cut them off.
She cuts them, and they're, like, super rough and, like, hard. And she's like, they're so coarse.
Yeah. And then they have that argument. He, like, freaks out, and mm-hmm. That's the part where he starts screaming about her not understanding the flesh.
You don't understand the flesh.
I've become free. I've been released, and you can't stand it.
Get in the pod. It'll make you feel sexy.
Okay, but realistically, when he does start transforming into Brundlefly and has all the insane makeup.
Brundlefly.
But when he has all this fucking makeup on his face, like... Okay, first feat of acting is he has figured out beautifully what it means to be half fly, half human. Because if a director was like, so you have to, so like put yourself there mentally. Like, what are the emotions that you're feeling? It's like, I don't fucking know. What the fuck am I supposed to reference?
Go study the fly.
What emotional recall exercise can I do to make myself feel like a
flutter.
Fly?
Flutter around.
So there's that layer that he somehow manages to figure out and is like incredible. But then he's also like showing his humanity underneath all of this makeup, and you look at him and you're like, you're disgusting,
But like,
I feel bad for you.
So bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's so sad.
Yeah. I mean, they sir, they cut the scene when there's a deleted scene that is like a fun fact. So they deleted this scene where I was gonna call him the Brundle Fly. When Seth Brundle starts beating the shit out of this cat that he puts through the telepod, because the cat gets sort of like merged with the baboon. Yeah,
he puts them through together.
And he puts them through together, and they get merged, and it starts like hissing at him. So he like starts like beating it to death with a metal pole, because he has a lot of bars and poles in his warehouse.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit laying around in this warehouse space.
But anyway, so the reason why they didn't keep it in the film was because they, you know, the second that happened, the audience like lost all like feelings of pity / respect for the main character. Like, they were like, well, fuck this guy. If he gets turned into a fly, I want him fucking dead. Like, I want him dead. But we still care for him, mm-hmm. because I feel like there's, you know, Jeff Goldblum does such a great job bringing humanity into the role, like you said, despite the layers and layers and layers of makeup and gore and pestules and hair.
Yeah. And like, you can see how scared he is, because like, he knows that it's not going to end well, but like, is still staying alive. Like, I am kind of surprised that Brundlefly didn't just like kill himself.
I'm surprised too
at some point, because eventually he reaches a point in the transformation where he is like too far from from Seth Brundle, mm-hmm. to be aware enough to do that, until the very, very, very end, where he puts the rifle to his head.
He, as a fly, is like, meh, kill me. And Gina Davis is like, okay, I guess I will.
But then she's like, but I can't do it. I can't.
And then I can't do it. I can't.
And then that fucker, what's his name?
I don't even know his fucking name. Her ex-boyfriend, basically. The character
has a really weird name.
He's like an editor-in-chief / her ex-boyfriend. He's a piece of shit. He's like a rapey weirdo.
Yeah, the character's name is Stathis Boren.
Like, what the fuck?
It's played by John Getz. But he's like weird and rapey and mean. But then all of a sudden, like, saves her and has like a weird, like, I don't know, like, redemption story. It's very strange. I don't agree with that part. I think he had it coming to him when Brundlefly vomited on his limbs and started eating him. And his limbs
started turning into like nubs. And he was like, ah.
Yeah. Yeah. But then also another really impressive, I think, feat of control with David Cronenberg is Stathis shoots Brundlefly in the head. Brundlefly dies and the movie ends.
Yep.
And I was just like, that's it? But then it's like, of course that's it.
Of course it's it. What else is the story? That was the story. The story was about a scientist man who made his little pods, his microwaves, and then
who put himself in the microwave and turned into a fly.
And then the fly died, and that's the end. There is no after. There's no epilogue. Gina Davis is not. I mean, she does. She does go on to have like a baby, and the baby grows up to be. Yeah. Like,
I mean, if we're going based off of The Fly 2, she does have the baby. But I think as far as the first fly is concerned, we're supposed to think that she probably gets rid of it. Yeah. I would assume, because she is very much to like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Because it might be a fly baby.
In her dream sequence, the fly is actually a giant maggot / larva / worm. Not sure what it is.
Like, it looks like, okay, do you remember those glow worms that were around when we were kids?
Yes.
They were stuffed worms, and they had little faces with a little sleeping
cap. Oh my God, yes, ew.
And when you hugged them, they lit up. So they were like a huggable nightlight. It looked like one of those.
It looked like one of those, but pale, translucent, and wiggly.
But like actually like a maggot or like a larva.
I think it was supposed to be like a fly larva. Like that's what it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
A fly egg. A flag. But yeah, no. This specific film really shivered me timbers in the worst way, but also the best way.
I was just horribly impressed the whole time.
Yeah. I cannot think of a single other actor who could pull that shit off.
No.
Think about it. Like, become the fly, Jeff. Become the fly.
So you're gonna play a fly,
right? Okay.
That's it.
So like, this is the beat. So fly. That's it.
And like, luckily, this movie was a success and is mm-hmm. like, people like this movie.
Well, it gave him some Oscar buzz. They really thought that he was gonna get it.
Well, if this had been like a cheesy horror movie that ended up being bad, I feel like it would have tainted Jeff Goldblum's career forever.
Oh, precisely.
But yes. He, you know, surpassed The Fly, so, and became who he is now.
He became, God bless. He went from, you know, random Jeff to Jeff. Brundlefly to Jeff Goldblum, as we know him and love him today.
Yeah. The world according to Jeff Goldblum.
The world according to Jeff Goldblum.
All right. Well, that's The Fly.
Yeah. I honestly have so much more to say about it, but the reality is this podcast will be as long as Independence Day, and we're not trying to go for that. Anyway, while Jessica fucking chokes on her hopes and dreams, we're going to move it on over to a few years later. 1988.
Okay, so we're going to move now a few years later to 1988. This is my second favorite movie of all time. I've seen it probably 20 times. This is Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yep, and it is exactly what you think it is.
I don't know if
what that means. A space musical.
This movie was directed by Julian Temple, written by Julie Brown, Charlie Coffey, and surprisingly, Terrence McNally.
Who was a real ass fucking playwright who died in March. You know, may he rest in peace.
Yeah.
The bastard wrote Ragtime.
He wrote Ragtime. He wrote Kiss of the Spider Woman. He's a real fucking
person.
He's
a real writer. What is he doing with his hands on this script?
Well, him and Julie Brown were married.
Oh my God.
He's like 30 something years older than her.
It's fine.
You know, it is what it is.
We don't judge. Jeff Goldblum is 30 years older than his current wife.
And they seem very happy. So, you know, there it is.
Truly.
Okay, so here's a little sum of this movie. In this musical comedy, Valerie, played by Gina Davis, is dealing with her cheating fiancé, Ted, Charles Rocket, when she finds that a trio of aliens, Jeff Goldblum, Jim Carrey, and Damon Wayans, have crashed their spaceship into her swimming pool. Once the furry beings are shaved at her friend's salon, the friend is Julie Brown, the women discover three handsome men underneath and take them on the town in 1980s Los Angeles, where chaos and love ensues.
Also hilarity. Hilarity also ensues.
So much hilarity. This movie is straight up valley porn, first and foremost. It's entirely shot in the San Fernando Valley. It's incredible. Monica and I are both from the Valley.
Yeah. So there's this line that I sort of want to start with. There's first of all, there's so much in this fucking movie. There's so much in this movie.
This film has everything.
But there was this one line that I had to like stop, sort of like close my eyes and like will myself to live. But in a very specific way, because if you're not from the Valley, like you won't understand why the fuck this is so funny. But they're like Gina Davis's character and Jeff Goldblum's character, who's an alien, like an actual alien, are like, I think they're about to have sex. And she goes, you know, I don't know if it's going to work. Like, you're an alien and I'm from the Valley.
You're an alien and I'm from the Valley.
Because that's so specific.
Yeah.
Like, you're from that world and I'm from this world. The Valley.
The Valley.
Like, she doesn't say Earth. She doesn't say Los Angeles.
America.
She doesn't say America. She says the Valley. But you're an alien and I'm from the Valley.
She's a Valley girl.
But anyway, yes. This was to reiterate Jessica's point. This is sort of valley porn. There's, is what it is.
Similarly to when we were talking about Punch Drunk Love. So I was talking about a very specific bank at an intersection near where I grew up.
Yep.
Across the street from that is another place that appeared in this movie.
Limo.
It's when Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis are leaving the hospital.
Yes.
And they're driving. You see like the street behind them. And I was like, oh my God, that's right around the corner from my house. Like I said, one of my most favorite movies of all time. This movie is insane. It's a musical film.
Sure.
Sure. But what I did learn is that a lot of the people who worked on the movie, like Julian Temple, has directed a ton of music videos.
Yeah.
And a ton of music documentaries. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people who worked on this movie are involved in music. So it made a lot of sense because the movie does kind of feel like a really long music video.
It does. The movie feels like a really long music video. And also it's not, I wouldn't necessarily classify it as a musical movie.
It's like a movie with
it's a movie that with music, like songs in it.
Yeah.
But you know, the way that you would typically categorize musicals, like the songs have to do with the plot and like move mm-hmm. the plot along, whereas this movie has a song dedicated to someone being blonde.
Yeah, that comes out of
being
nowhere.
A blonde girl. I'm a blonde girl, is what she says.
Because I'm a blonde. Yeah.
I just want to, you know, go into this by saying Jessica's like favorite movie of all time is Cry Baby.
Yeah.
So if you watch this movie and you question like yourself, your movie tastes and what have you, just remember this recommendation is coming from someone whose favorite film is Crybaby.
It's a very
which
specific
is a great film.
Taste.
It's just so specific. Crybaby is a fantastic film.
They're like,
so is this one.
The thing is like I like movies that commit to like an aesthetic or like an area of kitsch and are so self-aware about what they're doing that they don't try to be something that they're not.
Right.
Nobody made Earth Girls Are Easy thinking it was going to be an award-winning film.
No one did that.
They made it for fun, and that's exactly what it is. So like I have a lot of respect for stuff like that, and I think that's why it's one of my favorite movies. And I just like the overall aesthetic. I love the 80s. I love the valley specifically in the 80s. So
the one thing that I will say about this movie is the production design is sort of, for lack of a better phrase, out of this world. It is. So you look at like other movies in the made in the 80s that are about space or that reference space or the future or like sci-fi stuff. Mm-hmm. And you look at it and you go, that's a very 80s perspective of what space looks like, or that's a very 80s perspective of what like aliens look like. I feel like this movie is the 80s all over the place. And then when it comes to like their perception of space and mm-hmm. space aliens, it's very 50s, like Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
And I love that. Like, I think that, first of all, that was a fucking choice. Like, that was yeah. a choice that the production designer, the scenic designer, like, that everyone made to commit to the fucking bit and, like, go for it.
Yeah. They set the tone immediately with the spaceship because you see what it looks like. And it's very like
it's very 50s
cartoon 50s mm-hmm. sci-fi.
Like the Jetsons weird
yeah,
like
exactly
it's, and it's very like the colors are very poppy and mm-hmm. like not at all modern alien like black rock flying through space. It's like ooh alien ship flying through space.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum is bright blue, Jim Carrey is bright red. And David Williams is bright yellow.
And they look like half tigers, half aliens.
Yeah, they're all covered in fur.
And like stripes.
Yeah. It's incredible.
And they're obsessed with women.
Oh my God. The one of my favorite line from the whole movie at the top is, I'm tired of space. I need a woman. Which is pretty much what the movie is about.
The whole movie is about like the pursuit of like specifically the female form. Right.
I mean, it's about love. It's about the aliens wanting to find. Well, they just want women.
I'm trying to say is like they're just looking for what they call like bald women.
Yeah,
like they're really hairy, and they're like, oh, she's she's bald, but she's beautiful.
It's like bald and bouncy.
I know. No, he goes like, I want them round and bouncy. Oh, so soft and like because they're on their. Of course, they're on their spaceship.
Yes,
and they're looking at their television that they have on their spaceship, and they're gay, and they get this like radio transmission.
Yeah.
Of a TV station from the 80s of like the, you know, when there was like the fitness craze mm-hmm. and they're like all shapely and like bouncing up and down. And they're like, yes,
it's
soft
the-
and round. Mm-hmm.
And then they see those women, the skiing women in bikinis from Finland.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Like, we're going to Finland. But anyway, so we just get to Jeff Goldblum in this movie.
Yes. First of all, just the whole movie.
Yeah, we had to set that up.
We just
for
had
you.
To tell you what the fuck was going on.
Just like So this movie is 2 years off of The Fly. 2 years off of a movie that he got Oscar buzz for. And yes. Jeff Goldblum does Earth Girls Are Easy. I don't know why, but he does.
I don't know why either. I don't know why. First
any
of all,
of them did. Well,
what the fuck is Jim Carrey doing in this movie?
This is like one of his very first roles. This is pre In Living Color. Nobody fucking knew who Jim Carrey was.
You're right.
He's hysterical in this movie. He has like peak Jim Carrey humor that you know and love now. He was still doing back then. And it's so like, what a fucking treat to see him and Damon Wayans just go insane.
Go at it. Yeah. Truly.
But Jeff Goldblum is, you know, a respected actor at this time. And he plays a fucking alien. But he
a blue alien.
A blue alien named Mac.
Well, it's like Mac.
Yeah. And she's like, I'll just call you Mac.
Gina Davis is like, I'll just call you Mac then.
But he commits so fully.
They all do. They all do.
They all do. He's like so understated. I think this role is a really interesting role to contrast to like who he is in real life.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's so kooky and like
stammering. And
yeah. In real life. And in this, he's like cool and brooding and like doesn't say too much, but he just like slinks around every scene and is just like, Valerie, are you okay?
Valerie, sex.
What is sex?
Mr. Right?
I am Mr. Right? I think another really genius part of the film's plot is that the aliens have gotten all of their language, their English language and knowledge from 80s television. Mm-hmm. So they just speak in quotes from TV.
Yes.
And it's fucking hilarious.
It is so fucking funny because so the aliens are from this planet called
something.
Zathura.
It's like Zajala.
They're
or something
from
like
the
that.
Planet Zathura.
Jazala.
They're from the planet Jazala. And they're like their, you know, superhuman ability because they're aliens.
Yeah.
Is being able to listen to things and then mimic the sounds.
Yeah.
So like if they listen to like a cat's meow, they are able to replicate exactly that sound.
Yeah.
And then so on and so forth. It's how like a song sequence begins, is they're all mimicking sounds mm-hmm. of different household objects and items / the fucking cat, whose name is Bambi, who was obviously named by that fucker Ted. Because Bambi's a terrible name for a cat.
Please, one moment. Pour one out. Rest in peace, Charles Rocket. Yeah. He's so beautiful and in general. And also, like, he's great in this movie. He's so funny as Ted.
He's hilarious. He's the love doctor.
Dr. Love.
His fucking stethoscope is, like, hanging between his legs. Yeah.
So Ted's a piece of shit because he's cheating on Valerie.
Yeah.
But so also won't have sex with Valerie.
Right. So the whole deal is Valerie, played by Gina Davis, is, like, you know, about to marry this guy, Ted, who's a fucking doctor. And that's sort of like the whole setup of this film is she's trying to be all like sexy for him. Mm-hmm. And because he's like not giving it to her because he's fucking wasting it all on his cheating efforts. Mm-hmm. And so she feels like lonely. And so do the aliens, specifically Mac, who's played by Jeff Goldblum, the blue furry tiger alien.
Yeah. The blue alien.
The blue one. This is very specific. The primary colors. but anyway, so I found that to be very natural despite the movie being so over the top. Mm-hmm. Like, I understood their attraction to each other.
Yeah.
If that makes
sense.
Which I, going into this movie, after the first, like, 10 minutes of it, I was like, nothing serious is, like, there's going to be nothing serious in this film. Like, this, I'm just going to, like, be on this ride, enjoy the film, and, like, you know, think about what I saw and then go to bed, right? But no, I understood sort of them both coming from a place of like loneliness and feeling like they don't necessarily have a place in this world.
Ooh.
And coming together because of that. And I think that was a really interesting, serious moment for me because it sort of, I wouldn't say that it came out of nowhere. I think that the movie set it up very well.
Yeah.
I just think that like it was a nice little breath of fresh air in a film that was constantly in your face.
Yeah, I agree. What I always tell people that I make watch this movie, because I have made many a person watch this film, is that the whole time you're going to be going, what the fuck am I watching? And then by the end of it, you're like, that was really fun. Because I mean, it is a lot of fun, but there also is like some, you know, like some reality in there. I think there's that scene, this whole sequence when they're at the dance club, which is actually Griffith fucking Observatory.
Which is just, did they do that? Yes. Did they do that in the 80s?
They filmed it at Griffith Observatory, the exterior at least. Right. This movie, to put it in perspective, had a $10 million budget. $10 million. It only made $3.9 million
gross. Of course it did.
They lost so much money.
So much money.
But listen, I would pay him for it. If I had it, I'd be like, here, take this.
Take my $10.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so there's that whole sequence at the Griffith Observatory Dance Club where after the dance-off, which is one of my most favorite parts of the film.
Limo.
He, like, Gina Davis goes outside, like, onto the deck area of the club, and Jeff Goldblum is playing the piano, which they always have to slip into a movie.
Of course, because he's a brilliant piano player.
Yeah, exactly. He's a great jazz pianist.
Jazz pianist.
Pianist? Pianist. Pianist. Whatever.
He's a great jazz peony.
Peony. Yeah, so they go out and they have that like really nice moment where even though he's still speaking in like quotes to her, he understands what she's going through.
Yeah.
And like wants to be there for her. So I think it has a lot to do with, you know, like human emotion like transcends language kind of thing. Which is like a fun, cute addition to an otherwise wacky fucking film.
Super wacky. Like one of my favorite lines is, Valerie, are we limp and hard to manage? Because they're a lot, you know?
Yeah. Oh my God.
But
yeah.
What an insane way to ask that question.
I love when she tries to pass them off as a boy band that she won.
Oh, yes. MTV. Yes. They are the band that was sent to me by MTV.
I won a weekend with the band.
Oh, they're a rock and roll band.
Yeah, this movie is just really fun. If you want to see Jeff Goldblum do something really fun, that in a weird way, I mean, I know before I said that it's nothing like who he is in real life.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that the role itself is nothing like him in real life, but the movie is a lot like what he is in real life.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yes.
Yeah, so if you want to see something like that, I think it's great.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to see aliens do like fucking hibachi in space,
yeah,
do it. There's like this scene in the opening, in like one of the like opening sequences where mm-hmm. like they're fucking doing like Benihana bullshit in space. Like, yeah. It's so confusing.
Yeah, it's really strange. Nothing makes sense.
There's
also some good cameos. Like Angeline, who is an LA staple, shows up in this movie. I've seen her a couple times around LA and I'm always really excited when I get to see her and her pink car.
Only pink.
She rented a billboard like off of Franklin, I think like a year or two ago.
No way.
It was just an Angeline billboard. And I was like, the fuck? You're still relevant?
She has money, honey.
From somewhere. She's a fucking LA mystery, man. Someone needs to make a movie about Angeline.
I think they will. I think she already has that cooking up.
She probably Pink has World. Like some agreement that when she dies, she will reveal her life or something.
She'll reveal the reason for the pink.
Because nobody knows where she's from, how old she is, what she's doing here. Everyone is very confused. But yeah, and then there's other really good people in this movie. Like Michael McKean is in this movie.
Right.
He plays the pool boy.
Yeah, man. Give my love to Finland.
I had just sex waxed my board.
What an insane film. This film is full of like iconic, memorable one-liners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to deviate off of Jeff Goldblum's stunning, stunning performance in this as Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And just talk about the fuck. Where the fuck is everyone getting this fucking technology where they get to make over someone?
Oh my God.
From head to toe.
That was in my notes. I said,
in this fucking yet another film world
where we have computer technology Clueless, that doesn't exist.
Miss Congeniality? Mm-hmm. Earth Girls Are Easy? What the fuck?
Where they just instantaneously import a photo of themselves from that day without taking a photo and then just change it.
Change the hair, change the makeup, change the clothes. Like, what the fuck?
I would also like to emphasize, she became a platinum blonde from dark brown
in a day,
which is impossible,
and then immediately changed her hair back, and her curl pattern was still intact. That's the most unrealistic thing about this movie, quite frankly, is the hair. That's the problem with this movie.
But yeah, if someone wants to fucking explain to me how this goddamn software works and where I can get my grubby little hands on it, please let me know. I'd love to not have to dress myself 5 times in the fucking morning.
Yeah, it'd be amazing. That would be great. It would be really, really, really amazing.
But anyway.
Yeah. Go watch this.
That was Earth Girls Are Easy. If you like quirky fun songs that do not move the plot along but are still catchy.
But are still really fun.
And pops of color, watch this fucking movie.
Yeah. And you'll be rewarded by, like, I don't know. I think performances in movies like this get overlooked a lot because they're like, oh, the movie is just so wacky. But I'm like, sometimes that makes it even harder to perform and harder to be like an authentic
character. It's a good fucking film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, he's like really great and even keeled the whole time and really sexy, which is hard to maintain when everything around you is fucking insane. So well done, Jeff.
Well done, Jeff. Going into our third.
A third and final film.
Our third and final film.
A fave of our audio engineer, Aaron.
Oh, it's Independence Day. Dun, 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 dun. Independence Day, the day the aliens came. Independence Day, woo, woo, woo.
No, you got to sing the song from earlier. The sky. You have to sing your Independence Day rock song from
I'm
earlier.
I'm back, boys. No, we'll just cut that back. We'll just cut that in.
Okay. I thought we were going to leave it at the top.
Yeah. And then we'll cut it in again.
Okay, cool.
And then we'll cut it in again.
We're going to do a formal recording of that track, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll make it like a fundraiser for our podcast. People can download it for 99 cents like it's fucking iTunes.
Independence Day. Mm-hmm. Came out in 1996. Happy birthday, Jessica.
I was born in 1995, but thank you.
1994, 1995, 1996. Where did I get the 96 from?
I don't know. We were both born in... No, he was born in 94. But in December, right?
So then why did I think... Probably because I put that you were 37 on the website.
Yeah, that explains why you thought my birthday was in 1996. You fucking nut.
You fucking macadamia nut ass.
You stupid pecan.
You fucking pistachio. The final film is Independence Day. It came out in 1996, directed by Roland Emmerich, who also directed The Day After Tomorrow, and I think 2012.
He loves apocalypse.
He loves a disaster film. Mm-hmm. Written by Dean Devlin. Devlin, like in Just Go With It.
I was about to say, like the movie with Adam Sandler. Devlin. Okay, we'll try that again.
No, we have to keep that in. Written by Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich. When aliens descend on every major city on the globe, an ensemble of people band together to save the planet. We follow David, played by Jeff Goldblum, a disgruntled scientist who first discovers radio waves that are key to the invaders' destruction. Steve, played by Will Smith, a hot-headed Air Force pilot who dreams of becoming an astronaut. President Whitmore, played by Bill Pullman, an ex-combat pilot battling with his public image. And many more as they survive the first wave of destruction, pick up the pieces, and save the world before Independence Day.
I had never seen this movie before, had you, Monica?
I had never seen this fucking movie before.
I'd heard of this movie before. It was a movie. It was one of the many movies that my boyfriend goes, "You seriously haven't seen this?"
Yeah.
And I say, yes. Partially because, one, I don't really give a shit about action movies or like space shit. As we know,
Jessica doesn't believe in space.
This falls more under fake space for me. And it almost entirely takes place on Earth. So I was okay with it. Mm-hmm. Also, because it was less of an apocalypse movie rather than like an invasion movie, I was also okay with it because I also cannot handle end of the world films.
I love end of the world films.
I fucking hate it. It gives me the same feeling that space movies give me.
One of my favorite films is 2012.
That's nice.
And also so The Day After
Roland
Tomorrow.
Emmerich fan.
I don't like Geostorm.
I have no comment. I have seen none of these films.
I don't know if it's by the same guy, but I don't like it.
I think that's Dean Devlin. Dean.
Dear Dean Devlin. Can you just confirm that real quick? Okay, fucking Dean Devlin. Fuck that guy for making Geostorm shit movie.
But also for partially writing Independence Day.
Oh, so good. So good.
So great. So great.
10 out of 10. Jeff Goldblum in this fucking film plays like an astrophysicist who works for like a broadcast company, right? Or like what is the company?
It's news.
He works for like a broadcast company. And this whole time you think, at least I thought that he like was working in his field, but he wasn't.
Mm-mm. Well, not like entirely in his field. He's doing like science shit for them. But then like in doing that science shit detects radio waves, a disturbance.
Okay, this is some 90s apocalypse bullshit. Like some of this shit is like, we can do this. We have the technology, but you do not, sir. You do not have the technology.
No, Jeff Goldblum in this movie is like if Seth Brundle was like successful and could talk to people.
Yes. And was a little bit less intense.
Yeah, yeah.
And who rode a bike.
Yeah.
And he played chess. And he wore dumb clothes.
Well, similarly, though, in both movies, they don't drive.
Yeah.
Because Seth Brundle has motion sickness.
Do we know why Jeff Goldblum doesn't drive?
I think they say something, but honestly, this movie is very long. And there's a lot of storyline, so I don't know.
I mean, like, Jeff Goldblum doesn't drive.
In real life?
Yeah, right?
I don't know.
Because think about like every movie that he's in, he like doesn't drive.
I don't know.
Is this like a conspiracy theory?
I mean, Google this. I believe he does drive in real life. Just not in these two movies. So, you know.
He plays chess and chess plays a big role in this film.
Chess does play a very big role in this film.
Both metaphorically and actually.
Mm-hmm.
One of his like famous lines, he like looks into the abyss and goes like, checkmate.
He's so like, so much of his like signature way of speaking, I feel like comes out in this movie and like is really what made it into pop culture.
Oh, definitely.
Because Will Smith is like in the background freaking out, or not in the background, but he's like on the side freaking out, and Jeff Goldblum's just like, well, if this doesn't work. There is one. Okay, so one issue with the big like fake technology in this movie.
Oh God.
Is that he comes up with the master plan to like
infect the computer of the mothership with a virus.
With a virus. We're assuming their computers work the same as ours.
This is what I use
the same data and the same coding. I love when they're in the spaceship and it's inside of the mothership in space. And he pulls open his computer and it just says like virus downloading with like a big skull on
the
screen.
And it's just like, it's one of those things where you just have to fucking suspend your disbelief. Otherwise, you're going to chop your head off. Like you're going to blow your own head off if you don't do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This movie is full of like action movie tropes.
Yeah.
One of the big scenes, or like the big scene that like a lot of people sort of quote and like talk about, is the scene where the president is giving his like fucking speech.
The Independence Day.
We will not go quiet or the night, is what he says.
A speech that a lot of mainly straight men are like really inspired by.
I know, literally all straight white men are like, oh my God, like
I use
that speech monologue and like my bullshit. And you're just like, okay, all right, sir.
Okay, Brad.
Okay, Chad. Oh, anyway, the fucking speech. So there's this like speech that the president gives sort of at the I think the beginning of the third act of the film, like when everything fucking starts to go down.
Yeah, when he's about to get into the plane.
He's like, combat pilot. Come along in the air.
To go nuke the fucking thing right before Randy Quaid's suicide bomb.
Oh my
God. Randy Quaid in this movie.
So good.
He's insane. He's fucking insane.
Literally.
I mean, we're supposed to, like, he has been, like, abducted by aliens before. I get that he would be, like, kooky Randy Quaid, but it was like on another, like, it was on a purely comical level.
He was on one.
Also, like, I didn't give a shit that he died. I was like, please kill yourself to save the world. Please.
You're a fucking guy who flies his plane. Who
flies planes.
Drunk.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And has these kids that he, like, it took me a minute to realize they were actually his children. I was just like, are you just like a weird caretaker? There's no relationship here. That section of the movie, I feel, was really underdeveloped. You have like bargain bin Keanu Reeves playing the son. Who's just like, my dad's a hero.
Clearance Keanu Reeves.
I'm so sorry if that actor is like still working.
Yellow tag Keanu Reeves.
This is like Keanu Reeves red that you get
tag,
at Ross.
Blue
or like
tag
Marshalls.
Oh my God. Home Goods Keanu Reeves.
There's a lot. Okay, this movie, I would say overall, this movie, very, very good, very iconic, but there are small things in this movie, like Randy Quaid, that I just like cannot get behind.
Cannot.
I can't get behind that. I can't get behind the fucking dolphin engagement ring that Will Smith gives Vivica
Fox.
Okay,
that shit is ugly.
That's ugly as fuck. What is that? She's already
she's really into dolphins.
She's a stripper as it is. Like, we don't need to perpetuate stereotypes that they'll just like take anything. Garbage. If anyone ever proposes to me with a ring with an animal on it, I'll nuke you.
I'll nuke the shit out of you. The entire goal of the film is to fucking nuke
aliens.
The aliens.
Kill the fucking aliens.
But specifically to nuke them. So the undertones of this film are severely pro-America.
I mean, it's called Independence Day.
Right. On this day, our Independence Day.
That's Monica's incredible Bill Pullman impression.
On this day, our Independence Day.
See, the thing is like you say he speaks through his teeth, and I just don't agree. I just think he doesn't open his mouth very much, which I don't equate to like using your teeth to speak. Does that make any sense to you?
I think you're a piece of shit, Jessica.
Okay, well, I guess you can't come back from that. You can't come back from as far as arguments go.
This was just a fucking, honestly, like, at the end of the day, the three of us sitting here right now, this was just a fucking action movie.
Yeah. What I will say is I didn't expect to like this movie.
I didn't expect to like this movie either.
I don't like action movies. I don't like alien movies.
I really enjoy Vin Diesel's The Pacifier.
Okay, yeah, that's a pretty good one.
That one's good.
We all know I love Speed.
Oh yeah, you do love Speed.
But besides that, not really into them. And I also have a weird thing about things that are very like pro-America.
Me too. I sort of cringed while watching this film,
but
to the nth degree.
But like, it's still a really good movie and is really funny at moments. Like, Will Smith is great.
Will Smith is fantastic
in
this film.
He's super good in this movie.
He's like the voice of reason in this film. He's like he plays like the underdog almost. Like the one that was never sort of given the chance to be the astronaut. And then he ends up there and he more than proves his worth.
And people like think less of him because he's in love with a stripper.
Right. And he's also black.
Yeah, there's that too.
He's the only black character.
Yeah. But he saves the day. Him and Jeff Goldblum
exactly.
save the day. The nerd and the black like pilot save the day.
The weird ticky nerd and the black ass. He's an astronaut because he goes into space. So let's give credit where credit is due, Jessica.
Well, sure. He becomes an astronaut because he does go into space eventually. But yeah.
What makes you an astronaut? Going into space or being an astronaut, like being astronauted by NASA?
Being astronauted?
Yeah, like given the title astronaut.
I think
astronaut
you have to be
you.
Given the title.
No, I
like just because I drive doesn't mean I'm a driver.
Yeah,
does that make sense to you?
It means you're a driver. If you drive out there,
I'm not like a professional driver.
So, did anyone say you were a professional driver?
What I'm saying is just because he went to space doesn't mean he's an astronaut. He was not trained.
Doesn't mean he just went to space.
Also, because he's flying essentially just like a really high-powered plane. He's not like flying, you know, a rocket.
A spacecraft. He's not in a rocket. They're called spacecrafts. Get it fucking okay, together.
But you know what I mean. He's just doing what he would normally have done.
Okay, you know what?
But in space.
I will give you that.
Thank you.
He was not given a mission by NASA to fucking go anywhere.
But he was given a mission by the president, which something in this movie.
It is what it is. The point is, there's not a lot to say about this movie.
Maybe let's focus on Jeff Goldblum's performance.
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying is there's not a lot to say about the movie as a whole.
Sure.
It is an action movie. It is pro-America. Mm-hmm. It is an apocalypse film. And the CGI is actually really fucking good for being 1996.
Yeah, and all that miniature work.
Yeah. Fucking
pretty solid.
Amazing. I think it's like it holds like the record for like the most miniatures in a film ever.
Oh, wow.
And it continues to hold that record because everything's CGI now. Mm-hmm. So I tip my metaphorical hat off to you.
Yeah, because she's not wearing a hat.
I'm not wearing a hat. But if I was, I would tip it off to you, filmmakers and miniature makers of Independence Day 1996.
Yeah.
But going to specifically Jeff Goldblum's performance.
Yes.
He was so Goldblum-y in this role.
Yeah. But like still managed to like sell himself as a different person. He reminds me a lot of Christopher Walken in certain ways where they're very just like, they're known for being like very kooky and having like a very signature way of speaking. But when it comes down to having to do business, having to act and tell a story, they fucking pull it together.
Oh, yeah.
And take the pieces of themselves that are exaggerated in real life and tone them down and just like kind of use them to color their performances.
Well, yeah.
He's so smart.
Yeah. I mean, Christopher Walken in Click is different than Christopher Walken in Hairspray.
Yeah. I mean, we could go all the way the fuck back and say, like, think about Christopher Walken now and then watch, like, The Deer Hunter.
Yeah. I think my two examples were more universal. You're timeless to me.
I was actually listening to that soundtrack on the way here.
Amazing. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think you sort of like took the words out of my mouth without taking the exact words. It's fine. You don't let me have nice things. Fucking pistachio. But I completely agree. I think that Jeff Goldblum in this film, first of all, he sells being a hero. Like, he sells being the one that you count on.
Yeah.
Which I found to be incredibly impressive because Jeff Goldblum does not give off hero energy.
Despite being 6'2 and really hot.
Despite that.
Yeah.
His vibe is not the hero vibe.
No, not at all.
He's not the guy that's going to save the world. Like, that's not him. Mm-mm. I really appreciate the fact that he was able to sort of, like, dissect the different parts of himself and give us a pseudo hero, like someone we could count on for very specific reason. And Will Smith gave us like the two punch, like I'm the like actual hero.
Yeah.
And Jeff Goldblum gave us like the nerdy hero, which I appreciate.
I think this movie, like, I mean, this movie is a little cheesy in some ways.
Oh, it's very
absolutely
cheesy. It's very cheesy.
Especially because it has that big sweeping score. It's, you know, very grandiose. But I think it's an ensemble piece, and through that, like, emphasizes, this is going to sound so cheesy, but it emphasizes, like, teamwork.
Yeah.
And how all of these different people have various hero elements that, when put together, are, like, the perfect storm to save the day.
That was the cheesiest shit that's ever come out of your mouth,
but
Jessica.
But you know it's true.
I know it's happening. No, it is absolutely true. You speak truth and also nacho cheese. You speak truth and also Gruyere, Brie, and Havarti.
Every cheese is
all
coming
the cheeses.
Out of my mouth.
American, French, Swiss, all cheeses. I think sort of the end goal of the film was to be like the blockbuster of the summer, mm-hmm. which to my knowledge, I think Mars Attacks was like pushed. War of the Worlds was pushed because of the fucking hype around this movie was too intense. Like, sure. Everyone was sort of rallying around this film.
Yeah.
And I love Mars Attacks. I'm a big fan of like a campy space romp.
Sure.
Like, love, I love apocalypse films. I love like campy space romps. Love that shit. I think Apocalypse I think Independence Day lives somewhere between Armageddon and like War of the Worlds.
For you?
For me. No, no, no. Like in general, oh, like in the general. Vibe of okay. it. It's not super serious and it's not too cheesy to the point where you're like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
Like it's not nuking an asteroid, but it's nuking a spaceship.
Sure.
So
it's funny because when I was watching this, they're vastly different movies, but I was getting similar vibes to how I felt when I was watching The Color Purple, which we will discuss on the next episode.
I was going to say,
because they're very like there's a lot at stake. There's some serious shit going on. And yet we have this like kind of jaunty, like sweeping score and these like killer one-liners and everyone's confident that we're going to save the day. And I'm like, this feels very like late 80s, 90s. Like that's how they did.
That's how they did films.
Like movies that had big conflict back then.
Yeah. One acting moment that I love in this film that actually does not belong to Jeff Goldblum.
What?
I know. Was the acting moment where Will Smith is in the air with his friends and they all fucking get shot.
Oh, Harry Connick Jr. Yeah, R.I.P. Yeah. What a great cameo from him.
Truly. They all get shot. Mm-hmm. He doesn't crash into the ground, but he like parachutes down into the ground.
Yeah.
And he's dragging, he shoots the alien.
Yeah.
And he's dragging the alien's carcass through the desert. And I think that they shot this in Utah.
Yeah.
So it looks very like the man is dragging through the Utah desert this yeah. like alien carcass that looks disgusting and according to him smells disgusting. And you can see sort of like the, like you were saying earlier about Jeff Goldblum in terms of like him being able to go through like the seven stages of grief in like one minute or one yeah. second. He was sort of going through that in the sense of like, he doesn't know what the fuck's going on. He's dragging a fucking alien carcass through the desert and he needs to keep the alien intact in order to figure out how the fuck to like beat that thing.
Yeah.
And on top of all of it, he doesn't know if his fucking family is alive.
And all of he just watched all of his friends die too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like, I honestly, like, I didn't expect such a good, like, a really beautifully nuanced acting moment from Will Smith in that film. Mm-mm. It came out, like, it was there.
I didn't really expect a lot of nuance from any performance in the film. I kind of expected them to be very one note and just, yeah. like, serve the purpose.
But Mae Whitman was like, wow.
Oh, my God, little baby Mae Whitman. She's so fucking cute in this movie.
Egg.
Yeah, I didn't expect, like, too much, but there was a lot of, like, really incredible nuance, a lot of just, like, beautiful moments. Like, I love that they had the addition of Jeff Goldblum's character having his dad there the whole time.
That was so good. And they played so well off of each other.
Yes. They brought something out in each other and in the character that like would have been completely lost. I don't even think it was necessary for the movie, but it added another layer that made it so much better.
And I fully appreciated it. Like every single time that the pair sort of came on screen, because honestly, if you sort of look at the lifespan of the film, Jeff Goldblum is not in a lot of it. He's in very he's like exists peppered throughout the film and then very much in the third act.
Yeah.
But like first and second act, the man's like kind of nowhere to be seen except for like his one-liners and like very short scenes.
Yeah, very, very short scenes.
But when he's with his dad, like I forget that it's anyone else's film.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's their film. Like it's his film, his dad's film. It's their film. They play so well off of each other. I think that I've never seen Jeff Goldblum in like a son role. Mm-mm. I've always seen him in like a husband role, a single man role, yeah. like that's that sort of thing. I've never seen him in like a role where he plays a son, and a son who's like active in his father's life, that sort of thing. Like they are in each other's lives, and the fact that his dad is there to sort of like get him through his divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Who is there to tell him like when he is sort of being pushed too far or not enough?
Yeah,
because I fundamentally do not believe that Jeff Goldblum's character would have been able to save the world with Will Smith's character had it not been for his dad like believing in him and telling him like, "You went to MIT, like this is your fucking shot. Just go fucking do it. Like just do it."
No, absolutely, I agree.
So who's the real hero in this fucking film?
The dad.
The fucking dad.
And just, you know, like to close out, that ending shot of Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum walking through the desert is fucking iconic, but also made me laugh so hard because you can see Jeff Goldblum keeps like looking over at Will Smith and it's almost like he's looking at him to be like, am I walking as cool as Will Smith? Right now? And he like has a little extra swagger in his hips that he would never have had otherwise.
This is what I'm talking about when I say like you don't see Jeff Goldblum giving off like hero energy. Yeah. Like it just doesn't happen.
No.
It's just so, it's so good. He plays so well off of Will Smith. Will Smith gives you like the star power, mm-hmm. the pilot boy, the good hero, the good dinosaur, if mm-hmm. you will. And Jeff Goldblum gives the nerdy astrophysicist who saves the world using a computer virus.
Yeah.
Because of course the aliens have the same computers that we do. Because America is the only country, mm-hmm. and Earth is the only world.
And that's Independence Day.
Independence Day.
And that's Jeff Goldblum. We love Jeff. He's been in so many movies, but like it really came down to what has he starred in? Like what was he in enough to give us enough to talk about?
And I wasn't allowed to talk about Jurassic Park because we had to do Independence Day.
I told Monica she could have her own dinosaur themed episode.
We're going to, stay tuned. We'll be doing The Land Before Time. The Good Dinosaur.
Dinosaurs.
The movie with an exclamation point.
It's dinosaurs. I thought it was just dinosaurs.
No. Oh my God, wait. Oh, no, no, no. Sorry. We're back. Oh, no. Sorry. It's going to be The Land Before Time, We're Back, and Jurassic Park. Stay tuned.
Hell yeah. We'll see.
I don't know if I'll actually be able to do it, guys. But anyway, Jessica, what have you been dabbling in, girl?
Okay, so I told you a little bit about this earlier, but I discovered something called, there's like a TV network or like a channel or something called Dabble, which is very fitting. And you can watch all of Martha Stewart's old episodes on this network. And so I've been watching a lot of like old Martha Stewart and just, it's almost like ASMR for some people. Like it's just like listening to Martha talk about how to properly like season a cast iron is absurdly therapeutic to me.
Amazing. I fucking, you know, Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart are like tight.
Oh, hell yeah. I know.
Yeah.
They've been tight for years.
They've been tight forever.
Because I think they did like a, they did like an ad together. Like
they did an ad together, ago. And then like he came out with a cookbook. She was very supportive of it. She's a great lady.
And now they're buddies, and they've done like commercials together. Mm-hmm. And yeah,
no, I fucking love Snoop Dogg. And now Snoop Dogg is a big vegan legend.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he's bringing Beyond Patties to Dunkin' Donuts, et cetera, et cetera.
That's cool.
So he's living his fucking life.
Hell yeah, Snoop.
Snoop.
What have you been dabbling in?
Besides Snoop Dogg, I've been dabbling in. So I've been watching a lot of TV like these past couple of days. A, because we cannot leave due to the fires. So like before you could like, you know, get out of the house and like, go on a walk or something, even with Miss Rona in town. Mm-hmm. But not anymore. So like there's a pretty big blanket of smoke over Pasadena. So like I have to stay inside. Because I'm very, very sensitive to that sort of thing. And I've been watching a lot of TV. And I sort of just finished this, like, really big project for work. And so, like, in order to shut my brain off, I was like, I'm going to binge watch something. Like, I'm going to fucking go for it. Like, I just finished 2 months of this, like, huge project that I had. It's over. Like, I can, like, fucking turn my brain off and watch something. It has to be something good, mm-hmm. gritty, dark. I started watching fucking Ozark. That shit,
hell yeah,
is,
I haven't seen it, but I heard it's amazing.
Amazing. First of all, I'm a big Jason Bateman fan.
He's good. He's a good dude.
There is this movie, one of my favorite movies for some godforsaken reason, is this movie that I cannot remember the name of to save my life.
Okay.
But he's in it.
What's it about?
With Jennifer fucking Aniston.
Oh, the one with the sperm, where she wants the sperm.
Yeah, and his name is Wally.
Yeah.
In the movie.
Fuck, what's it called?
But he is a fucking comedic legend in that fucking film. He sells it. He and Jennifer Aniston are like treasure and gold together. It's beautiful. And also my favorite show in the whole world is Arrested Development. I'm obsessed. Well, the first three seasons. But we don't have to talk about that. The point is, Jason Bateman can fucking do it all.
Yeah.
The man he's can a daddy. Do it all. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. What's Did it you called? Find out?
Oh, The Switch.
The Switch.
Yes. An excellent film. A really great rom-com. Yeah. Love that fucking movie.
It's good.
But yeah, Ozark is super gritty. It's fun. It reminds me of Breaking Bad, but like not in the sort of like the, it doesn't have a similar vibe. It has like different stakes and like it's different in terms of like the, obviously it's a different fucking story. Sure. Otherwise it would just be fucking Breaking Bad again. Mm-hmm. So it's good.
That's cool.
10 out of 10.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that brings us to our final segment. So usually we do questions, but we've also been asking for daddy stories about you meeting a daddy. And someone submitted one. And I also have a second one because I met Jeff Goldblum. And it was a very momentous occasion in my life. I'll post a picture of it on our Instagram.
Yeah, go to our Instagram. At John Favreau is my daddy. Please seek out this photo.
For those of you who don't know, I live in Los Feliz, and he performs regularly at the Rockwell Table and Stage over on Vermont. Vermont. I think it's Vermont.
That's a state.
I'm pretty sure it's Vermont.
That's Bernie State.
And so I went and I watched him play jazz piano. And before the show, he does like a Jeff Goldblum movie game. So he'll ask someone to shout out a movie that he's been in. And this is, he does like crowd work before he starts playing. He asks you to shout out a movie that he's been in or an actor or something. And he'll be like, oh, Gina Davis. Gina Davis was in The Fly, who also had this person in it. And then someone else has to shout out like a movie that that person has been in. And he finds a way to connect it back to himself. It's pretty fucking hysterical. And so he plays jazz piano. His band that he plays with is incredible. I remember one of them, like their like upright bass player came into, I was working at J. Crew at the time. He like came into J. Crew and I was like freaking out, but I didn't want to tell him where I knew him from. I don't know why.
Why? That's like a perfectly normal place to know him from.
I know, but I didn't want to like be weird. Whatever. So I helped like fit him for pants. It was very normal. But the whole time I was just like, he plays in Jeff Goldblum's band. Oh my God. but so in the middle of the show, Jeff takes the time to take a photo with any person who wants to meet him. So he just asks you to line up and he'll stay there for as long as it takes.
Okay, Jeff Goldblum loves being famous.
Oh yeah.
He loves it.
He loves it, but he's also very kind. And so like me and my friends lined up and I went up to him and he like put his arms around me and he was like, he's like, I'm eating a cough drop. Can you smell it? And he breathed his air directly into my face. And I was just like, oh my God. I was like, yeah, you smell like a Ricola. And he pulls the packet out of his pocket. He was like, you were right. And I was like, just so you know, Earth Girls Are Easy is one of my most favorite movies of all time. Like, I absolutely adore you and I adore that movie. And like, thank you so much. And he was like, thank you so much. And he like rubbed my back very like, like nicely and like made this face where he was just like, And then I sat down and I was like, I felt like I was on cloud nine for like a week after that.
I just wanted to, just because of the way that sounded, I just want to let the audience know, people who are listening, Jessica enjoyed this and wanted it.
100%. Yeah. Oh yeah. I was like, my hands were all over.
Yes. So it was definitely reciprocated.
Oh yeah. I wasn't just standing there and he was touching me. Like it was a joint effort and it was very clear that I, you know,
it was consensual. Was
consenting the whole yes. time. Yeah, that was incredible.
Incredible.
I want to go back so badly, but obviously
Miss Rona's in town.
Rona right now. But also the tickets sell out really fast.
So if you ever see it, you should have
jump on it, y'all.
So good.
Ugh, amazing. We stan. We love Jeff Goldblum. Anyway, please go check out that photo at John Favreau's My Daddy on Instagram. Give it a like and comment whether or not you think it was a Ricola or not. Or maybe it was just Jessica's fever dream. And it was like a Halls or something. No, like Halls cherry, Halls lemon.
I know my cough drops. I have coughing problems.
Are you team Ricola or are you team Halls?
Oh, Ricola 100%.
I'm team Halls. I feel team Ricola are weak bitches. Like I'm a Halls gal.
I love a Ricola.
I want my throat to burn.
Okay, well, that's just your own personal
problem. But anyway, so sorry to disappoint our listeners. We do not have a question for what would John Favreau do today. Mm-mm. Instead, we are bringing you our first ever submission for an I Met a Daddy story. Mm-hmm. So
buckle up, kids.
This is gonna
be a wild ride.
It's gonna be a wild ride. So, this is Courtney's story. When it was Parents Weekend at Northwestern a few years ago, my mom and I were at a coffee shop just enjoying ourselves when suddenly her eyes start following someone or something. Out of the corner of her mouth, acting as calm as possible, she goes, "Is that Judd Apatow?" She and I had binged Freaks and Geeks relatively recently, and we're generally obsessed with his work, and I truly just finished his book like a month before. Now, I must admit, though I was very familiar with Judd's movies and TV shows, I never actually knew what he looked like. So I looked at the man she was talking about, and he looked honestly like any other middle-aged dad in a Northwestern sweatshirt. Then, Leslie Mann walked in, and as we all know, she is gorgeous and much more identifiable. And when my mom says, "Well, that settles it, it's him." And it turns out they were also visiting their daughter, Mauve.
Her name is Maeve.
Maeve. just so the listeners know really quick, yeah. We do not edit what you guys send us. Like, no. If you guys don't know who the person is and like put a question mark, we'll let you guys know.
Yeah, so Courtney wrote Mauve, and I'm fact checking real time and saying her name is Maeve.
Her name is Maeve. Who was a freshman at the time, but has since dropped out LMAO.
That's so smart.
She's like on Euphoria, it's fine. But that's not where our story ends. My mother and I took it upon ourselves to say hi because we honestly couldn't help ourselves. But we were both so nervous about pissing him off if we made a scene. So we hid behind a bookshelf in the corner for like 2 minutes, contemplating how to approach him. And eventually, my mom just kind of pushed me forward and I word vomited, "Hi, I'm so sorry, but I just read your book and we just want to have to say hi." And he was honestly delightful, as was Leslie Mann. They shook our hands and thanked us for whatever reason, and we scurried out of the coffee shop, giggling like literal schoolgirls.
Wow, what a moment.
I know. What an incredible opportunity. I love Judd Apatow.
I know. I don't think I would have approached. I've seen many a celebrity in the wild and have said nothing.
I always say nothing. Yeah. I'm not like a big, may I take your picture, may I meet you kind of person.
I think that's part of like being raised in LA.
You're like told not to like approach celebrities. Whereas I think if you grew up elsewhere, yeah. You're like, if you see a celebrity, like you have to say hi.
Yeah. Especially in the Valley, because so many celebrities like retreat to the Valley as like their suburban, like where they're going to raise their families. So it was like very normal. Like I saw Kevin Hart like picking up breakfast for his family one day when I was like, I had brought some of my college roommates to my hometown for the weekend to like stay at my house to like see the Valley, to see the sights of the Valley.
See the Valley.
And Kevin Hart walked in and they were like freaking out. And I was like, just please don't say anything.
Just shut the fuck up. This is the Oasis. This is a normal thing. This is the fucking Oasis. Get your fucking shit together.
He should be able to pick up his pancakes from CC's without, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I saw fucking Ashton Kutcher at the fucking coffee commissary. Like that, it was great. Leave him alone.
Ashton Kutcher was like assistant coaching football at fucking like Harvard Westlake.
Yeah.
And they were playing our high school football team. And so he was like on campus one day and we were all just like, play cool guys.
I know, like fucking act. Okay. So I just want to prefaces for the entire world. It is not cool in Los Angeles to act like you're a fangirl of the celebrity. It is considered to be so much cooler to just like pretend like you don't give a fuck.
Like, or to say like, you can say like a very quick, like, hey, I really love your work, but like, don't.
But don't
try
like,
and like take up too much of their time or like get a photo.
That's like a seven deadly, like one of those like seven deadly sins. Listen, do not get it.
I'm not like slapping your wrist if you have done it, because I get it. You know, when we see our heroes, that's what we want to do.
I mean, at the height of the iCarly phase, when I met Miranda Cosgrove, I lost my shit. Yeah. I took like seven photos.
But there are like, there are ways to do it where it's a lot chiller.
Yeah. Not the way I did it. Not the way I did it.
I'm assuming you were young.
I had her CD in my like little limited two purse.
Okay, and
I
was so like, yes, you were young.
I was like, sign my fucking CD, Miranda Cosgrove.
I'm sure you said the F word.
No, I didn't. I definitely didn't. I was just like, oh my niblets, it's Miranda Cosgrove from iCarly. I want this signed and I want a picture.
Oh my God. Oh man.
Oh, that was Jeff Goldblum. That was our segments.
Yeah.
That was our podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Send us your daddy stories. Send us a question.
We have a website coming out. We used to have a website, then it fucking expired.
Now we're like getting back on that shit. I'm firing up some like fun shit for you guys on Instagram. Some people have been interacting with it, which I genuinely appreciate, to the point where Monica yesterday texted me and she said, are you like feeding this yourself? Like, and I was like, no, people are actually like responding.
I refuse to believe that like we have any sort of success that isn't just us hyping us up.
Granted, like most of these people were all people I do know in real life, but like,
still
listeners, you guys, we love you.
We just want to be famous.
That's all I want. I just want Jon Favreau to hear this.
The goal is to get Jon Favreau to fucking hear this, but not have it be a Julia moment. Yeah. Where, like, he fucking hates me.
Yeah. Where he's like, why the fuck are you doing a podcast like,
Jessica,
about me?
Get the fuck out of here.
I think that our redemption comes in the fact that, like, it's not just about him. It was inspired by our love for him.
Yep.
Because if this was just a podcast where every day we talked about Jon Favreau,
I don't think you guys would listen.
No one would listen. It's fucking boring. Sorry, so, Jon.
Thank you guys for listening to the fucking podcast. As always,
don't sue us, Daddy Favreau.
Love you.
Love you.
Peace.
Bye.